All right. Good evening. Thank you for being here. Appreciate it so much. We're going to be looking at the first part of Ephesians 6 tonight. Actually, we're going to tie together what's said at the end of chapter 5 into 6. So you can have your Bible ready and your journal and ready to go there. And we'll see what we can learn. So we all know that few things are more rewarding than relationships, but, and this is how this works, few things are more challenging than relationships. And we are hip deep in relationships in this part of Ephesians. And the fact that relationships have those qualities of rewards and challenges, that makes sense that so much attention would be given to them. So let's look at this here. We saw at the end of chapter 5 these instructions about husbands and wives. And really, this all bleeds into chapter 6. And one of the things we're going to spend some time on tonight is putting all this together as a unit, the end of 5 and the beginning of chapter 6. But let's go ahead and read chapter 6 to begin with here. Chapter 6, verses 1 through 9. Ray Conies, can you read that, please?
Obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, that it may be well with you, and that you may live long on the earth. And fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Slaves, be obedient to those who are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in the sincerity of your heart, as to Christ. Not by way of eye service as men pleasers, but as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. With good will render service as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that whatever good thing each one does, this he will receive back from the Lord, whether slave or free. And masters, do the same things to them, and give up threatening, knowing that both their master and yours is in heaven, and there is no partiality with him.
Thank you very much. So, we're going to diagram here, and I could fake it without PowerPoint, but not the way that I do these diagrams. There's no way. I'm completely wedded. Thank you, Ken, very much. I had no worries that Ken would come through. I knew. I mean, there's some things you can bank on. He's one of them. So, let's look at this here. I want you to go back with me even further than the end of chapter 5. In 5:18, remember that expression, be filled with the Spirit? And we talked about that. Colossians 3, verse 15 and 16 is a parallel statement. It says, let the word of Christ dwell in you. You see, when the word of Christ is in you, so is the Spirit. Because the word of Christ was delivered by the Spirit to the holy apostles and prophets. That's how that process works. And there are three things. We studied this class before. Two classes ago. And that is, if you're filled with the Spirit, you're to be addressing one another in psalms, hymns, spiritual songs, singing to one another, making melody in your heart to the Lord. You see, when the word of Christ, when the Spirit is teaching you, then you can in turn teach other people. And that's how you do it. And to give thanks in all things, always, to the Lord, it says in verse 20. And then submitting to one another. And there is a framework out of reverence for Christ. In other words, this is the theme in this relationship section. The thing that drives the relationship, the thing that guides the relationship, is our relationship with Christ. How I treat other people, why I treat them the way I treat them as a Christian, is because of my connection to Christ, my service to Him. Watch how that keeps popping up. And so, it's this idea in verse 21 of chapter 4. That's 4. It should be 5. Why did I put 4? I'm so sorry. This should be 5:19, 5:20, 5:21. Sorry about that. So you do that right. You do it the right way on your diagram. So this idea of submitting to one another goes right into this idea of wives submitting to husbands. So there's a linkage here, right? But then, since he's talking about wives, then he starts talking about the responsibility of husbands. Husbands are to love their wives, okay? I would have you see that what happens here and in that section that we just read, that all of this is coming out of the idea of being submissive to one another. That submission to one another is one of the core parts of our relationships with other people. In general, and in specifics, whether we're a husband, a father, a wife, a child, etc., or even a master and a slave. And then we just read children are to obey parents. Now, let's stop here and talk about a little bit about this. Why would we be talking about submission here? All right, wives submit to husbands, husbands love wives. Well, if you go back, and we'll come back to the children in just a second. I'm just a little ahead of myself. If you go back and look at the standard and the motivation, husbands are to love their wives in the same manner as who loved whom? Christ loved the church. Just like the wife is to submit to her husband as Christ, the church is submitting to Christ, husband loves the wife as Christ loves the church. And it says, he gave himself up. Think about that. The husband is to love his wife like Christ loved the church in the sense of also giving himself up. I would have you see that's a type of submission. I'm not doing what I want to do. I'm giving up myself and I'm helping you. And then he talks about nourishes and cherishes the church. A husband who nourishes and cherishes his wife is giving himself up unselfishly. He's caring for her. And in a way, he is serving and submitting to her needs. Now, Ray Smith gave me an assignment last week, and I remembered it. I didn't forget my homework. What was the thing you brought up, Ray? Tell everybody. If they didn't remember. They weren't paying attention like you were.
Well, I just wondered, it told the wife to submit herself to her husband.
Right.
But on the other hand, told the children to obey.
Okay.
So I just wondered the difference between submission and obeying.
Yeah, that's a great question. Is there a difference between submit and obey? Well, in our English translation, all of our English translations, New American, etc., you have this distinction of submit and obey. And I suspected these were two different Greek words, and they are. Now, they're similar, but they're different. Now, strawberry ice cream and chocolate ice cream, it's ice cream, but they're different, right? There's a nuance difference. So, this term submit, which is found back in chapter 5, verse 24, I got the chapter right now, when it says, now as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit in everything to their husbands. That term means to be under. Literally, it means to be under, put under, and even obey. But the emphasis of that word is relationship. Put under or be under. The term obey is a different Greek word in chapter 6, verse 1. And it, at its core, it means to hear because you're in a position of being under. It means to heed, to obey. So the emphasis on the woman is about a submission relationship that's all about relationship. With the child, the emphasis is on hearing. When it says children obey your parents, it's in essence saying, now children, because you're in submission to your parents, you need to be carefully listening to what they tell you. That's the difference. Okay? And we understand that. Yeah.
So many times in the past, you hear people say, wives obey your husbands. And that's not what they say.
And there is an obedience element. But the words that are used are emphasizing the relationship. She submits in that she's following her husband's lead. The emphasis is not on him telling her what to do. The emphasis is on her following. Now with children, the emphasis is on telling them what to do. Matter of fact, children are told to obey, which means to heed, to listen. And then right after that, fathers are told to what? Don't provoke them to wrath, but what?
Think about the nurture and admonition.
The nurture and admonition, or the discipline and admonition of the Lord. Well, how do you do that? You got to pass the Lord's teaching on. So with children, the emphasis is on obeying in the sense of listening and heeding.
Well, there's a sense, especially when you talk about small children, they don't have a choice. I mean, they're going to get disciplined if they don't obey the
rule. Number one, you don't have a choice. That's exactly
right. Yeah, that's rule number one. But the wife, it's up to her whether she submits to the husband or not. She has a choice to do that or not. But if she doesn't do it, then she's not submitting to Christ.
It's a different kind of relationship. So the submission is different. Thank you, Ray, for asking that. Because I don't think I would have dug on that. I don't think I would have stopped and said, okay, what's the difference? So you helped us on that. And then it talks about, in a sense, wives are submitting. Husbands are submitting in that they're giving unselfish care. Children are submitting in that they're heeding their parents and listening to their teaching, which is supposed to be based on the Lord. Let's stop there. We're going to keep diagramming, and we'll come back and we'll dissect the text a little bit. But while we're here, I just want to ask you this question. The first thing fathers are told was what? There's a negative. Don't do something. What was it? Don't provoke to anger. What do you think that means? How might a father provoke a child? Now, note something too. Children are to obey their parents, which includes mom and dad. But there is an emphasis here on who is to take the initiative in the leading and training of the children. It's fathers. You talking about something that goes against the grain of culture. Ours and every culture of any time, most people think that the chief responsibility for training is with the mother. Well, she is a trainer, and I would have you see that probably she's the most important trainer. But there is a heavy responsibility laid on the father here. So how might a father provoke a child to anger? Joe?
Well, needlessly teasing them or insulting them.
Sure. Cutting them down. Yeah.
Being completely controlled.
Controlling, necessarily controlling, right? It's not about the child obeys so the parent can have control as much as the child obeys so the child can learn how to live one day without a parent. Because one day they need to be without a parent and on their own, doing their own thing. Okay? That's the whole point of raising them. How else might a father provoke a child to anger or to wrath?
Inconsistent.
Yeah, right. Expectations are inconsistent. They're in trouble one moment for this. They're not the next day. Yeah.
Well, and some I know spoken already, but you know, some fathers are constantly criticizing the children. That's what they focus on.
Harsh, belittling, unreasonable in their expectations. All those kinds of things. And it's clear children need admonition. That means correction. They need discipline. They need support and encouragement. That's exactly right. Think about all the places in the New Testament that emphasize the role of encouragement to one another. Children need that too. That's exactly right. Now, I want you to see that this. It's just, isn't it marvelous how you just keep studying these Bible books and you're just impressed at just deeper and deeper levels? And think about this. I think another way to understand don't provoke your children to wrath, because this book has a rhythm to it. Don't do this, do this. Are you getting that rhythm in this section? Don't speak falsehood, speak the truth with each other. Don't steal, labor. Put off clamor and malice, put on tenderheartedness and forgiveness. There's this rhythm, okay? So think about the rhythm of you don't provoke to wrath, but instead, you bring them up in the Lord. They're being brought up by the Lord. And the Father is a tool. I've had parents tell me when I was teaching school things like, well, no child of mine should be getting a B in this. It's all about the parent. It's about the child conforming to the parent's expectation. rather than, well, is this child learning and growing and developing? And no, it's like, the child's supposed to be conforming to what I want them to do. No, the father's job is to help the child to conform to what? What the Lord wants the child to do. And any time a father is not using the Lord's standard, he's going to run the danger of provoking a child to wrath, because he's going to use a standard that is unreasonable, inconsistent, belittling, all those kinds of things. The best way for a father to raise a child is to raise a child based upon the Lord. The father who's a Christian is submitting himself to the Lord as he raises his sons and daughters. Did you catch that? He's not doing it his way. He's doing it the Lord's way. Which means, really, whose children are they? They're the Lord's children. They're really God's children. And instead of, this is my house and it's going to be done my way, no, it's the Lord has made you, the Lord has given you to me, and I'm going to help you see the way of the Lord. That's how that's to work. And so, you know what a father is doing? He's submitting his rearing of his children to the Lord. So watch how that, now we're starting to see submission, not just to be about horizontal relationships, but also submitting to the Lord. And watch how that increases here with masters and slaves. Do you have something, Les?
Yeah, many years ago, when Gina was doing home health occupational therapy, she had a patient that allowed, she told me about this, so I remember it, but she had a patient that allowed her children to basically choose whatever they wanted to eat. And so they chose junk food all the time. I believe it was one child, I remember, a boy. And Gina reported that because he just ate junk food all the time, his skin almost looked green. It didn't look healthy. It wasn't nice, you know, it was a very bad color for skin to be.
Frog boy.
Yeah. And so parents have to control. You don't want your children choosing what they eat all the time, just like you don't want your children choosing what they wear all the time. And so if the father and mother don't choose what they're eating mentally and spiritually, then the same thing happens. They get sick. They get spiritually sick because they're eating bad food. Right. They're eating, junk in, junk out. And that's what's, that is happening a lot today, you know, through the smartphones and, you know, devices that children have. Sure. They're eating poorly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And parents have to nip that in the bud, you know, because it just leads to further degrading and, harmful thoughts and exposure to bad things when they're just children.
Right. Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a heavy responsibility for the father here. And I want you to watch how this section develops into 5, beginning of 6. Reverence for each other, I mean, submission to each other, but remember that verse back in verse 21 of chapter 5. Submission to each other out of reverence for Christ. This is all connected. This submission is all driven by our relationship to Christ. And I want you to see that even when the way a father should raise his children is not his way. That's what that's saying. It's the Lord's way. Which means we have to submit the way we think a child ought to be raised to the ways of the Lord. Okay? All right, so, and then he talks about slaves obeying masters. There's that obey, Ray, but it's a form of submission. And then masters, who are they submitting to? What's the reminder in verse 9?
Right.
That remember, you're to be, stop your threatening, knowing that he who is both the master of, is their master and yours in heaven. I'm sorry, messing that up. In other words, the master over the slaves, he has a master. And that is the Lord in heaven. And there's no partiality with him. Let's talk real quickly about slavery. I just think because of how the Bible is represented, and people just think this is so unusual, I just think it merits it. We've talked about this before. Three quick facts. Slavery in ancient times was not race-based. It was based on economics. It was based on captives in war. It was based on birth. You think, well, isn't birth connected to race slavery? Not necessarily. If you're born to free parents and they're one race, you're free. If you're of the same race and you're born to slave parents, you're slave. Race has nothing to do with it. It's birth connection. Second of all, there was in ancient slavery more mobility in slavery. You could advance to different positions, and some slaves had a lot of responsibilities. They were like administrators, managers, and stewards. And there was more mobility, not just up and down, but also in and out of slavery. You could spend part of your life in slavery and get out, or part of your life free and get in slavery because of economic hardship or captive in war or something like that. There were Roman Caesars who had ancestors who had been slaves. They had grandparents who had been slaves. And so it's not the thing that we think of in Western culture, and especially American culture. And did you catch that last statement in the English Standard? He is both their master and yours in heaven, and that there is no partiality with him. So with the Lord, when he looks at a master and looks at a slave, there's no partiality. And Western modern slavery, and I mean by modern, I'm talking about what happened in Europe and Africa and in the Americas and what spread in the American South and so forth, it was all based on partiality. Matter of fact, one of the justifications of slavery by religious people was that God had placed the black person in an inferior position to the white person. And the white person had an obligation to control them. Well, this says there's no partiality. And fourth of all, that what was going on here is that the Holy Spirit was giving these Christians, some of them had only been Christians a very short time. I mean, this is just really not, barely 2 decades after Jesus' death. 2 decades. He's giving people instructions because they're living in a society with certain societal structures. They got to find a way to work within those structures. And if they're a slave, they got to work in that structure. If they're a master, they got to work in that structure. And they're to work in such a way, realizing that they all have a master, and that is Christ, the Lord. And so what we're seeing in all this is that there is an element of submission in all of it. And submission has nuances. There are different ways you submit at different times based on the relationship. As children are submitting to parents, a father is submitting his standard of rearing his children to the Lord. As a slave is submitting to a master, that master is submitting himself to how he treats that slave according to the way the Lord wants him to treat that slave. So there is this mutual submission. Thus, I think it's all tied back here to being filled with the Spirit in manifesting that guidance of Christ in us by submitting to one another, and then we submit to each other per certain relationships. And sometimes these are family relationships, sometimes these are economic relationships, etc. Okay, that's our diagram. And I want you to see that all of this is an extension back in chapter 3, verse 1. Sorry, 4, verse 1. Get my chapters confused tonight. 4 verse 1 that starts off this whole section, 4, 5, and 6, have a walk worthy of the calling with which you were called. And then chapter 4, verse 21, 22, and 22, 23, and 24, put off the old self, be renewed in the spirit of your minds, put on the new self, okay? All this, putting off, being renewed, putting on, this is what we are to do. When we do this, this is where it shows up. There are things here in these relationships, we need to make sure we're walking in a certain way. In these relationships, there are things we should be putting off. In these relationships, there are ways in which we need to renew our thinking. in these relationships, there are some things we need to put on that's new. All of this is connected. It's very, very organic. Okay. Let's go and look at the text here. Remember, we like pausing to see where new creation, new covenant, new kingdom factors in. I would have you see that these instructions here, that's our main attention, chapter 6, 1 through 9 tonight, that this whole thing about children obeying their parents, which obey means heed. Listen. Listen to them with the goal to do what they say. Not just listen, but to do what they say. And that children are being guided in their instruction by the Father raising them in the Lord. The nurture and admonition or the discipline of the Lord. So what's happening to a child is through parenting, God is working to develop that child spiritually, which sets up the whole new creation thing that's going to have to happen when they become aware of their sin and they choose to follow Christ and they're forgiven, and then they start working on themselves. But already God's been working on them through their Father to train them. So there's a new creation element to that because it involves growth. Growth is connected to new creation. And then we've talked about new covenant. And when we introduce the idea of new covenant, we've emphasized the idea of teaching. We'll see that in the second part of the year, and we're coming up on that in the month of May, Lord willing. We'll start emphasizing new covenant. That covenant is always about, always involves teaching, instruction, commandments. Every time there's a covenant given, there are commandments given. In other words, covenant is a legal term. In any kind of legal documentation, there are obligations. Part of the first part is to do this. Part of the second part is to do that. I don't know why I cut my eyes at Andrew every time I use one of those illustrations. But part of the second part must do this when part of the first part. Is that okay for an amateur? Okay. Not like how you'd write it, but it's okay. But covenant and instructions go hand in hand. So the Father is instructing the children in the ways of the Lord. He's bringing them into covenant teaching. And then the master-slave thing, I want you to think about that. There's a new creation here. Think about it in ancient times, how masters typically treated slaves as chattel. Even the sophisticated Greeks, the Greek philosophers, would refer to slaves as tools, like a hammer. How dehumanizing. That sure doesn't go with this, right? There's no partiality with him. And how slaves felt about their masters. You know, cut an eye at them, you know, that kind of thing, making me do this again. It was such a, inherently, can you imagine a more polluted relationship than a master and a slave? How bitter everybody was and poison everybody was in this system. Well, now they're to look at this relationship differently because now they have a relationship with Christ. They're new creatures. Whether you're a master or a slave, you're a new creature. So your behavior has to change. Masters and slaves have to be renewed in the spirit of their minds. They've got to put off some things and put on some things. And that's what he does here about serving with sincere heart, with fear and trembling, and all that. And masters are to keep in mind they have a master in heaven. You know how you treat a slave the way God wants you to? Remember that you're God's slave. That's the starting point. So, there's a new kingdom element here. Why? Well, think about it. Bond servants, you obey your master as you would Christ. As bond servants of Christ, rendering service with a good will as to the Lord. You're in the Lord's kingdom. The Lord is really your king. You have an earthly master, but you have a heavenly king. And you're to be treating this master this way because of your devotion to the king. And then there is the master. Masters do the same to them. Okay, that's it. Do what to them? Be fair and reasonable to them like they're supposed to be fair and reasonable to you. and stop your threatening, knowing that he who is both their master and yours is in heaven, and that there is no partiality with him. Masters, and this is written to Christians who are masters. You have a king in heaven. You're in the spiritual kingdom now. The king sits on the throne. What's Jesus doing in heaven? He's sitting where? At the right hand of God. That was his fulfillment of David's everlasting kingdom promise. We see that in Acts 2. So the new kingdom is there in that master-slave relationship. Very clearly there. Okay. Comments. Observations. Scott?
So if there is a bond servant, say employee, put it in modern terms.
Okay, I think that is a fair parallel.
There's an employee that is serving only as a people pleaser,
right,
and a boss who is threatening and overbearing. It doesn't appear that there's an exception here of how we should act in our respective roles, because we all have that commonality of having a master in heaven.
This is, for years people have made a parallel between slave's master, employee, or employee, and I think it's a fair parallel. The slave-master relationship has always been an economic-based relationship. The very reason why slavery came to the Americas, it's all economic. It's not, we don't like those people in Africa, we're going to drag them across the ocean and mistreat them. No, it was economics. It was all economics. Native Americans wouldn't work for them like they wanted them to, and Native Americans were dropping like flies from the diseases, and so there was a huge labor shortage. It was all labor driven. Well, do we work within economic systems? And there were different kinds of economic systems. There were slaves, but then they had this thing called indentured servitude. You ever heard of that? Plenty of white people were indentured servants. And they would come to America and work for 7 years or 15 years, and then they could just go and do what they wanted to do. It was another kind of labor system. Well, we have labor systems. And sometimes people get in situations where they do have an overseer who is trying to master them. They really do. And it's very threatening and things such as that. So this is exactly the kind of relationship where we place this guidance, employer and employee. And we've all had good bosses and we've all had bad bosses. But like anything else, the Christian is called to a higher standard, to always do the thing that the Lord wants us to do, because it's all about our reverence for Christ. So that's why we submit to each other. And it's not easy sometimes. Very challenging relationships.
I mean, Jesus even refers to hired servants.
Yeah, and they're
hired servants. Which, you know, they're servants, but they're just getting paid, right, for what they do.
And in ancient times, as well as modern times, in some servants who are hired, the supervisor, the boss, still has a lot of control over them. A lot of control.
Like in verse 2, when it says, honor your father and mother, would that be a covenant? This is the first commandment with promise.
Well, there's a promise. Think about covenants. Very good. Okay. Ray really came through last week. Ray, you got a competitor here. You got a watcher. Okay. But think about covenants. Yeah, covenants always involve instructions and commandments, but covenants involve promises. The Lord told Israel, be my people, I'll bless you and protect you, but you got to obey my commandments. That was a covenant. And so promises are always connected to covenants. Excellent. I had not thought about that. Thank you. Okay. Joe, do you have something?
No, but since you asked, I was just thinking about a book I read. It was called 2 Years Before the Mast. It was a guy named Henry Dana, and he was a Harvard graduate that he had some problems with his eyes. He was going to law school. So he took a position on a ship as a sailor, and he spoke about life at sea and being under captains. And that book actually changed maritime law in the United States because of the mistreatment that they had. It was almost like, they were beaten for just about anything.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Rough. Rough, okay. And then we got Frank and Ray, I think that's the only ones in here, Earl's out there. When y'all were in the military, did you feel like you had a master at times?
You certainly did.
Okay. So there are all kinds of ways we end up in similar situations like this. Yeah.
They talked about the boot.
Okay. They gave you the boot.
You know, straighten up, you can get the boot.
That's right.
One extreme that a lot of people don't know about, when Ray and I wanted to get married, the commander had to approve him to get married.
I guess those rules were probably different now, but back then,
so.
Yeah.
You probably had to go see the chaplain, too.
Yeah. It's pretty controlling, isn't it? That is. Listen, back to Dylan. You're going to have to serve somebody. You can't ignore it. You can't escape it. The question is, who and how? Ultimately, even though we may serve people on earth, ultimately we're serving the Lord, and our service to the Lord affects that and governs that, and the Lord will always reward us and bless us.
My grandparents on my mother's side were sharecroppers.
Oh.
And they lived in this house 1 year, this house another year, and all their lives.
Right.
They lived in different houses.
Yeah. Sharecroppers in the late 19th century and even into the early 20th century, and many of them have been former slaves, by the way. They were black. But black or white, the sharecroppers, they had a very oppressed experience. They could be booted off that land at the whim of the landowner. They had little recourse. If the crops didn't do well, it put more pressure on them. It was a hard way to go. They felt like slaves. So, okay. Let's think about some things here over this whole section from the end of 5 through the beginning of chapter 6. There is a large amount of space dedicated to specific relationships. We have relationships already about speaking the truth with one another and sharing with one another and don't have malice and hate, but have forgiveness. We've already seen that back earlier in chapter 4. But now we have real specific relationships, husband, wife, parent, child, slave, master. And it's in this new creation transformation section of the letter, chapters 4, 5, and 6. Why? Why is there so much space dedicated to relationships?
Well, I think that's where you're the most influential, for one thing.
It's a great arena for influence.
Relationships are life.
Every day, all day, right? Relationships are life, right?
And the reading of the people's mail thing also, you know, we don't have slavery per se. But it was much of this Paul thought of directed to that church.
Right. And how relevant it is to us.
Oh, absolutely. To us, too.
Yeah.
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 But I'm just... He did write specific things to specific churches, Corinth, 2 Corinthians.
Yeah. And I think we talked about this early on. This is really in the category of a general epistle. This epistle is so universal. We learned so much from the Corinthian epistles, but they were very occasional. There were occasions and situations that prompted and really shaped those letters. And we learned a lot from them. This one, Ephesians, you ever seen a one-size-fits-all thing, you know, a hat or something? And more and more in my life, I don't find any of those things. One-size-fits-all, they don't fit me. But this letter is a one-size-fits-all. It really, really is. Now, and I want you to see, not only do we have a lot of instructions for relationships, but look how they're tailored. You know, Jesus taught some general things, and Paul has already too. Jesus taught, most notably, the Sermon on the Mount, what we call the Golden Rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. That works great in employments, works great in a family, marriage, friendship, on and on. But look how these instructions are so tailored. What is said to the husband is different than the wife. What is said to the children is different than the father, the master, and the slave. It's so tailored. Why? I saw your hand. Why? Why is it so tailored?
Because men and women and children are different.
We're all different.
And they have roles. You know, back in, for decades now, sort of liberal side of various forms of Christianity have misinterpreted or twisted chapter 3 of Galatians, where it says that all are in Christ, and neither Jew nor Greek, bond nor free, male nor female. So they take that to mean, and they'll overlook passages like what we've just been reading here, which designates a headship and an authority that comes down from God to Christ, to man, to woman, to child. But it's obvious, that authority is set by God.
We're not all exactly the same. So we all submit, but in different ways. We all serve each other, but in different ways. Because we're unique. Do you have your hand up? You want to say something more?
Well, in regards to the first question,
okay.
If when you're reading through the Gospels, such a huge part of the ministry that Jesus did on earth was all about relationships. And as far as the second question, I mean, we see over and over again that he never dealt with people the same exact way.
Right. Right. We've seen that recently on the Sunday studies, from Nicodemus to the woman at the well. And then you just keep clicking them off, the different people he encounters. It's a unique interaction he has that's suited to them. But this does... Anyway, but this could go, we could go a mile on this, but our culture has so honored democracy, and from that, meaning we all should be treated the same, which is good, which has been extended to we're all the same in every way. And there's really no difference in a man and woman, and there is. Okay? There is. There are distinct lanes. And when we appreciate that and then work within those instructions tailored to us, that's when things work God's way and work the best. Third of all, there's some outcomes, not in every one of these, but there are some outcomes linked to the instructions. For instance, Lori pointed this out. If children obey their parents, what's an outcome?
All life.
That's right. And that's a challenging thing. It's not a hard, fast kind of rule. It's a principle. And I think it has to do with you follow your parents' wisdom and guidance, and you'll have a better life and most likely a longer life. I think there's a practical element to it.
Well,
okay.
That's enough. If you didn't do that, you could be stoned.
Stoned, okay. Yeah. I mean, what do y'all think about that? That outcome, obey your parents and you have a long life. That's a promise from the Old Testament.
It's a truism, really.
It's a truism.
They're looking out for your best interests.
Right.
If they're being the parents they should be.
Right. Right. What else do you think? Long life.
You don't go out and do stupid things that could get you killed early.
I mean, Becca, I can't help but to go there in my head. I mean, there are people who have accidents and who get sick when they're young and they pass, and those are tragic things. But many, many, many of the young people I've known who have had an early demise, many of them had a hand in that demise by how they lived. I mean, really, it's sad. And if they would have heeded their parents, there's that obey, listen to them, they probably were given some instructions that could have steered them another direction. And they didn't heed.
Hopefully, that's going to carry on to their children.
Yeah, perpetuate, yeah.
Way that they were taught.
Right. Right. Okay. There's some other outcomes here. For the slave, for the bondservant, who ultimately his behavior and attitude is geared toward whom?
The Lord.
Yeah, to Christ. Which means oftentimes we think of outcomes, we think of some benefit to ourselves. But we need to think of what benefit we can offer to the Lord. And a slave, a worker in a difficult situation with a good attitude, who is working hard and is respectful, and they're known to be a follower of Christ, that glorifies Christ. It honors Christ. And that's a great outcome there. They're given unique, tailored instructions. We have some general instructions about relationships all the way back to chapter 4, verse 2, when it talks about walk worthy, right off the bat, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love, eager to maintain unity. That's all relationships. That's very generic. But then we have these tailored relationships here that with tailored instructions. But again, what are the characteristics you're seeing in all of these instructions?
Submission.
You don't do what you want to do. You do what the Lord wants you to do. I mean, really, can we sort of give that as our definition at submission in these texts is doing what the Lord wants you to do, not what you want to do. Husband to the wife. Slave to the master. Master to the slave. Even how a father's raising a child. Listen. Some of the most prideful attitudes and behaviors in a human's life is in their parenting. My children's going to do this and my children that. And look at my children. And no, it's not about you. It's about the Lord. And so the relationship with the Lord is the key to all of that. Okay, thank you very much. And we'll finish chapter 6 next week and then get into Philippians in 2 weeks, Lord willing. Thank you all for the comments, participation. You're just phenomenal to work with in this. So good. Ray, that's some of that encouragement you talked about giving.